This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, British Prime Minister Tony Blair meets with President Bush, and Africa is high on Blair's agenda. In July, Britain hosts the next meeting of the world's wealthiest countries, the G8, and Prime Minister Blair is pushing a proposal to accelerate development aid for Africa, $25 billion each year for the next 5 years. So far, the European Union and Japan have agreed to increase aid. President Bush disagrees. Last week, he said increased aid does not fit into the administration's budgetary process. There is an ambitious American aid program called the Millennium Challenge Account, but that money would go to countries that can show that they have weeded out corruption, invested in education and health, and encouraged private investment and trade. So far, 8 African countries have qualified, but the process has been slow. We'll talk about the different approaches to development, and we'll focus for much of this hour on the stories told in a new documentary called Africa Open for Business, stories that are often overlooked amid reports of famine, war, and disease. If you do business in Africa, give us a call. Tell us what works, what doesn't, and why. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Later in the program, major American corporations embrace anti-discrimination for gays and others. We'll find out how many and why. But first, aid and Africa. The news out of Africa is mostly bad. Poverty, disease, famine, wars, and genocide. There are other stories we don't hear enough of. Joining us now is John Chihemin, the Reuters bureau chief based in South Africa. He reports regularly on the business of Africa. He's with us on the phone from Johannesburg. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
The Blair Commission on Africa is pushing for debt relief for countries in Africa as a way to stimulate economic growth. The Bush administration thus far has not embraced that idea. How is the Blair plan being received in Africa?
It's been received with tremendous enthusiasm. Over the weekend, we concluded a meeting in Cape Town, South Africa, of the World Economic Forum Africa Summit, which brought together something like 500 business executives and government leaders from around Africa and the world, most of them dealing with Africa. And it was just incredible, the overwhelming support and enthusiasm that flowed through the meeting over these Africa Commission report. I think there are a lot of things happening now for Africa, which many people dealing with Africa now see as an opportunity that should not be missed. For one, the world is giving Africa now more attention in a positive manner than we have ever seen since African countries started getting their independence from colonial rulers in the 1960s.
And as they look at the prospect of debt relief and development aid, why now? Why is now, do you think, the moment? Just because they're getting the attention from the outside world, or are there developments inside Africa that would welcome these developments?
Yes, indeed. It's a confluence of several good opportunities happening in Africa. First of all, the Africans themselves are beginning to demonstrate that they want to see good governance and democracy prevail on the continent. They want to see less of corruption, which is why there is a formidable interest in what is called the Africa Peer Review, which is a plan by African countries themselves to kind of score themselves in the way they do business, in the way they govern themselves, the way they embrace democracy and civil rights. The first report of the African Peer Review will be coming out anytime now, and the first two countries to be reviewed in this manner will be Ghana and Rwanda. And following upon that, we have African countries also taking measures to improve their economies. In last year, 18 countries among the 53 in Africa recorded growth rates of 5%. And this is supposed to go up, according to many analysts, up to 7% possibly. So there's a lot of good news happening here, which business is looking at very carefully and not wanting to miss the boat.
Well, we'll get back to that in just a minute, but tell us, how is progress in the Millennium Challenge account? Has eight countries, as I understand it, have qualified for some of this money?
But so far, as we know, only one country so far has qualified, which is Madagascar, that we get about $110 million from the United States. I think there are one or two other countries that are in the process of qualifying for that. But as you mentioned in your introduction, this is the United States is looking at this as its own way of having countries actually compete for foreign aid.
And compete in such a way as by showing that they are the least corrupt, most efficient, that the money won't be wasted.
That is correct. But in the same way, this is what you will see many African countries will now begin to show that. And the overwhelming opinion at the Economic Forum in Cape Town was that as aid starts going around, countries will try to see that they qualify for aid by having themselves reviewed by the peer review mechanism, because that would be a very clear way to show a demonstration that you qualify for aid.
Getting back to this other story that you're talking about, the good news story out of Africa, if you will, I wonder, do you think that the negative images that we see so often in the news media, and it's war, poverty, famine, all of that, disease, do you think those negative images hurt efforts to attract business?
I think needless to say they do indeed. I don't think there's anyone in the world who would like to put money in a country that could go up in smoke any moment. I lived in Ivory Coast in the 1990s, and this was a country of tremendous potential in West Africa. It was the haven of peace. It was a shining example of good economic management. But once they had a coup attempt and the military seized power at the end of 1999, the country has been on the downhill ever since. It is the world's biggest exporter of cocoa, and all that is now a shadow of what it used to be. So clearly, that kind of news would not be of interest to anyone who wants to put money in Africa. But we can see now that the Africans themselves are taking the trouble to try and bring peace to the continent. There are peace missions managed by Africans themselves, and several countries now on the path of democracy, very firmly indeed. We have pockets of war here and there, but it is not on the same scale that we saw in the late 80s and 90s.
John Chaheman, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
John Chaheman reports on Southern Africa for Reuters and joined us from his home in South Africa. Joining us now is Joseph Stiglitz. He's a Nobel Prize-winning economist and former chief economist at the World Bank. He's with us from his office in New York. Nice to have you back on the program.
Nice to be here.
As you look at these two approaches, the Blair approach and the Millennium Challenge account that was set up by the Bush administration, there's a distinct difference in these two approaches, isn't there?
Yes, there is, but maybe you can clarify what aspect of those differences are you referring to?
Well, the Bush administration, there's this sort of public rallying cry, we need to do this now, we need to double the accounts, we need to forgive debt and move ahead with development aid. The Bush administration remains committed to its Millennium Challenge account idea that says, look, we've given a lot of money in the past, and a lot of that money's been wasted.
The fact is that we haven't given very much in the past. As a percentage of our GDP, the United States is among the advanced industrial countries is about the stingiest, and much of the aid that we give doesn't really go to promote development, but goes for, you might call, indirect or direct military. For instance, Egypt is a very big recipient because in payment for going along with the peace agreement.
And nobody disputes that Egypt is in Africa, but I think we're talking about sub-Saharan Africa.
Exactly. So the point I'm making is the amount of money the United States is spending on sub-Saharan Africa is not a great deal. The fundamental question that you raise is the right one, though. Can these countries spend more, use the money well? And the answer is unambiguously yes. Not every country, but there are some countries that have really been doing very, very well. Countries like Ethiopia, countries Madagascar, Mozambique, and the countries that are able to spend it well could use multiples of the amount of money that they're giving right now. In fact, one way of looking at this is to ask the following question. We are hurting Africa through our agricultural subsidies. Our agricultural subsidies on cotton, for instance, depress the price, the global price of cotton. The aid we're giving to many of the countries in sub-Saharan Africa that are cotton producers does not even make up for the damage that we are doing to the African countries. So I don't think we are on a very high moral ground. I think it is very impressive the way Blair has been emphasizing that we have a moral obligation to do more. And I also think it's in our self-interest that we do more for sub-Saharan Africa.
In our interest, I think trade with sub-Saharan Africa is up to over $25 billion a year, something like that.
Well, and it's not only trade, stability. We've learned that countries, we don't know exactly what causes terrorism, but we have an idea of the kinds of situations that provide fertile feeding grounds for terrorists. Countries where there's poverty, despair, high levels of unemployment among young males. These are not the kinds of environments that are good for democracy, which is one of the things the administration keeps talking about. And they are not good places for stability either in any sense of the term.
We're talking about Africa and how best to help a continent struggling with poverty. When we come back from a short break, we'll talk about Africa as an investment opportunity. Joseph Stiglitz, I hope you can stay with us. Also, we want to hear from you. If you've done business in an African country, call us and tell us how it went. 800-989-8255. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're talking about Africa. Tony Blair is in the U.S. this week, in part to try to convince President Bush to commit more money to help Africa stem the tide of poverty. Our guest right now is Joseph Stiglitz, a former chief economist at the World Bank, Nobel Prize winner, currently professor of finance and economics at Columbia University. And there are so many difficulties with investing in a place in many of the countries in Africa that suffers from infrastructure problems, and that can include everything from bad roads to intermittent electricity and all of those kinds of problems, as well as governmental problems and corruption. Is Africa a good investment opportunity now?
I think it is. I think it is. You know, the thing about investment is to look at areas that are underappreciated, where not everybody else has rushed in. And there are some countries in Africa that I think of as having enormous potential, Ethiopia, Mozambique, Uganda. I think and Madagascar, I think there are a number of these countries. There is a major initiative underway called NEPAD, where they're trying to build the infrastructures around Africa. These are the countries I mentioned are examples, and there are many more, of countries with good governments that have done an enormous amount to eliminate corruption, that have governments that are very concerned about promoting, you know, creating a business-friendly environment. And they're very much willing to work with investors to on projects that will promote their economic growth. Interesting, for instance, Madagascar's president is a very successful businessman in his own right.
Joseph Stiglitz, thank you very much for being with us today. Thank you for your time.
Sure, thank you.
Joseph Stiglitz, former chief economist at the World Bank, and he joined us from his offices in New York. Aliyu Kante has a story to tell as well. He's the founder of Vodacom, a cell phone company in the Congo, and he joins us now from his hotel room in Paris. And Mr. Kante, nice to speak with you this evening.
Thank you very much, sir.
Tell us a little bit about your company and how it's doing.
Well, my company is called Vodacom Congo. We're doing excellent. We cover about 200 cities around Democratic Republic of Congo, which is about 2,345,410 square kilometer, bordering with about 9 countries in the sub-region.
And most of us have heard about it in the context of the war that has gone on there for now many years. How did you manage to start a business under wartime conditions?
Actually, we started just beginning of the war. And during the war, we continued to build our cell sites and deployment in Kinshasa. The need of telecommunication, actually, most part of Africa besides South Africa and then maybe West Africa, Senegal, and maybe Ivory Coast at that time, where the countries, Kenya, have a better telecommunication system. But most countries like Angola, DRC, Congo Brazzaville, we're not having Sudan, probably we're not having a good telecommunication system there. So we were, the population of Congo is around 70 to 75 million people. And when I deployed the network, was less than 15,000 telephone subscribers in the country. And the telephone was actually mainly for the top government official or big corporate officials. And telephone was not affordable. Was around originally the telephone was $16 per minute for calls, and when I launched my network was $7.50, and incoming calls were $2.50.
Well,
and when we launch it, we bring it down to $1.
Well, even at those prices, Congo's not a very wealthy country. Who are your customers?
The population.
The whole population.
The whole population. Today, after when I started, as I said, it was about 15,000 subscribers in the country. Today, other people follow me. We have about 2.5 million subscribers in DRC within 3 years.
And you need some infrastructure if you're going to have a cell phone system, towers and that sort of thing. Or is that safe in a war zone?
Oh, yes. We have built towers all over the country. We have over 250 towers around the republic, and but the population need the communication. Actually, the war was going on, but people have to communicate to each other. We were in Kinshasa, and we built in the east part between the border with Rwanda area to upper side toward Uganda, and actually our network make people to communicate between the rebel and the government and the population, because you don't know what happened other part of the country.
What effect did that have?
Pardon me?
What effect did that have when people started talking to each other?
Actually, when we talk, we can negotiate. Without no communication, you don't know what's going on the other part of the other side. So our network provides that. The population, most part of the country, well, I think the need of the people of DRC encourage us and give us a lot of courage and to build the network, because was totally ignored. And when we started, most of these suppliers around the world do not want to invest in Congo. And we have to do it on our own and build it locally, to train the locals, to build the towers from the scratch, to finance them and the land, and put those structures together, which are still existing in Congo.
Aliyu Kante, good luck to you. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Aliyu Kante is the founder of Vodacom, a cell phone company in Congo. And if you'd like to join our conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And let's talk with Jean, or is it Jean, who's calling from Fort Lauderdale in Florida?
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me. I would like to, my comment is that Africa is not going to be helped by aid from Western governments or by the African governments themselves. The situation in Africa now is one in which the political and economic markets are dominated by monopolies and rent seekers, and I believe that what is going to develop Africa is for the West to push free politics, that is, make it possible to, just like President Bush decides to do, promote freedom and really mean it. And it should not be limited to Iraq or specific countries. It should be global if it is to be done, and it will help Africa a lot. And promote the liberalization of the economy, make Africans, and the third would be to make free access for Africans to the rest of the world. And I think this is the most important factor. As long as Africans will be restricted to their own countries, and they will not have, they will have so many problems to get a visa to go to any Western countries and learn from the experience in those countries, there will be no hope for development in Africa.
And Jean, what part of Africa are you most familiar with?
I worked with the government of Cote d'Ivoire.
The Ivory Coast is what it's called.
Yes. And I tried to promote those ideas through decentralization of power. That is, provide the population with the opportunity to select locally elected individuals to run local governments and local public services. And that effort has been successful to some extent, but it appears that it may be one of the reasons why the country is currently in the civil war that it is. I think some people are really afraid of the possibility for Ivorians to decide at the local level what services they need. Well, let me take one example. People need to decide whether they need a school or free water to drink, and what of those two are most important at the time that they are feeling the needs. And it's not for somebody in the central government sitting in the capital and meeting in conferences with the world leaders to tell them whether it's important to build a school or to invest in clean water.
Jean, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
A moment ago, we spoke with Aliyu Kante. He is one of 10 business people profiled in a new documentary called Africa Open for Business. It's a film about entrepreneurship. Adenike Ogunlisi is also in the film. She founded her own children's clothing line in Nigeria.
It was the first time that anybody had ever marketed children's clothes like that. Not a clip out of a foreign magazine, but actually using Nigerian children. The response, people actually wanting the made in Nigeria garments. It's like, where's the label? I want the label outside. I want everybody to know I'm wearing Rough and Tumble. And I couldn't believe it.
Joining us now is Carol Pinault, writer, director, and producer of the film Africa Open for Business. She's with us at the studios of member station WABE in Atlanta. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What is it that most people don't know about business and enterprise in Africa?
Well, I think that mostly they don't know that there is business and enterprise in Africa. You know, if you watch the television news on Africa, when there even is news on Africa, it's entirely refugee camps. Perhaps they'll be on the Travel Channel, something of the animal parks in Africa. But we really don't know that Africa even has an economic life, much less that it has an economic life that in places is really thriving, that people are making tremendous amounts of money there.
The economic life that we do hear about is often extractive, either in the oil business or diamonds, and sometimes, given war, blood diamonds.
Yes, of course. And, of course, there has been a history of extractive industries coming into Africa and taking it out. What I think is happening, perhaps in this generation, is that Africans themselves are becoming the entrepreneurs. You've just heard two great examples, Aliou Conté and Adenike Ogunlesi. A huge cell phone company, a very small children's clothing line. Both of them really just went in there, believed they could do it. They adhere to all of the principles of business that we would find anywhere in successful businesses around the world. And they're really just extraordinary people. The thing that I found overall from doing this film, these people really are the future of Africa. They are the ones who understand the problems of Africa, and they are the ones who will carry that continent forward.
Mm. And how is the stock market in Africa? It's also not something we hear often about.
No, it isn't. And, you know, the amazing thing is that's where you can make the highest profits in the world. The Ghana stock market the year before last, it was the number one performer in the world. It made 144%. There is a mutual fund that you can get in Ghana, Data Bank, and they have averaged 60% a year in the 7 years that they have been running. There are several stock markets throughout Africa that are among the top performers in the world, and we never hear about those.
We're talking with Carol Pinot, the writer, director, and producer of Africa Open for Business. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is James. James is with us from Fort Lauderdale in Florida.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air, James. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to share some of my experiences with doing business in Africa.
And how did that go?
Well, actually, terrible. Although the only country I can really speak about is Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
I've run a very small company that sells wireless pan-tilt zoom cameras, the kind of security cameras you see at airports and casinos, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Except I make the system wireless, so it can be used without wires over a 3 or 4 square mile area. And the company's called Science Lookers. And we make these mostly for university researchers who want to study animals in the wild without bothering them with human presence.
And how did the experience of doing business in Africa go?
Well, actually, it was just terrible. There were four different times that people had attempted to buy products from me out of Africa, and each time I was either defrauded Or the transaction never went through because there was no payment forthcoming. I've been sent fake wire transfers telling me that $10,000 was put in an account for me for equipment that was to be delivered to the Lagos province in Nigeria. And I got to tell you, a small company cannot afford to lose $10,000 worth of equipment and transportation for it.
Mm-hmm. Carol Pinot, obviously you don't speak for everybody doing business in Africa, but James's story is not unheard of.
It seems that certain governments provide a safe haven for a persistent criminal element that likes to prey on businesses.
Let's hear from Carol Pinot, if you would, James.
I think that there are stories of problems everywhere, and certainly in Africa there are several people who have had problems doing business there. It's not that it isn't without risk. The thing is that Africa offers the highest return on direct investment in the world. And of course, where there are high returns, it's because the risk is there. But what the top investors into Africa will tell you is that the perceived risk is not as great as the real risk. Now, does that mean that it's easy to do business there? Does that mean that it's not with complications? Of course not. Every place has complications in doing business. But I think the main issue for me is that the way we portray Africa is as if it has no economic life, and that is extremely detrimental to the continent. Investors will not come where they can't imagine that there is an investment climate. Now, could Africa do more to improve its investment climate? Absolutely. And could the governments do more? Without a doubt. Absolutely. They need to.
James, thanks for the call, and better luck next time.
Okay. Well, I'd just like to say that businesses flourish in an environment where law and order is the rule, and businesses are destroyed in environments that are indifferent to crime. And international businesses will simply avoid places where business are businesses are openly preyed upon by a criminal element. For an example, I no longer sell anything anywhere on the continent of Africa, and I've got another list of about 6 or 7 terrorist nations that I don't do business with, either because of a criminal element or by restrictions by the State Department here.
Okay, James, thanks very much again.
Thank you.
We'll continue our discussion about Africa and business after a short break, and we'll also hear about a new report on gay and transgender people in the workplace and how their rights are being observed or not, plus your letters. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. At the moment, we're continuing our conversation with Carol Pinault, writer, director, and producer of a new movie called Africa Open for Business, a film that profiles African entrepreneurs in the midst of unremitting reports about poverty, famine, disease, and war from Africa. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Steve. Steve is with us from Brattleboro, Vermont.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You're on the air, Steve. Go ahead.
Well, I've been working for an NGO in small and medium business development for several years now, and that's given me the opportunity to see some of the opportunities that exist in Africa. And my job specifically has been to research some of these opportunities in order to promote them, doing the feasibility analyses and the profitability analysis, all that. And so then once we've identified something that's profitable, we go ahead and try to promote it and get investors involved. And I'll tell you, it's almost impossible to get American investors to invest in Africa. And I think that's due mainly to the negative perception that was mentioned by your earlier guest.
What kind of reactions do you get when you call people?
Well, first of all, they just think they're going to lose their shirts. They're not willing to station anybody in Africa. Of course, you know, in order to do any investment properly, you have to have somebody on the ground permanently.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't do that. And, you know, when the American investors won't do it, there are others that will from other countries that are taking advantage of those opportunities that we're missing. And these are from countries such as South Africa, which, of course, you know, has no fear of the continent because it's on it. Indian investors, to an increasing extent Chinese and Vietnamese and others.
Mm-hmm. Carol Pinault, this goes back to, I think, your perceptions of, you know, Americans hear all these stories about Africa, capital A Africa, without really understanding that some places are very different than others.
Well, yes, I think that's very true. And, you know, one of the things that I keep thinking is that Africa offers the highest return on direct investment, and yet it receives the least amount of direct investment. And that doesn't make sense. Money goes where money makes money. So why isn't it going into Africa? And if you talk to people, they'll say, well, it's because of the risk factors. But I don't think that's really what it is. I think just as your caller said, when you mention Africa, the door is just shut. And that if we could start getting more coverage where we would show Africa in all its complexity, then I think we could start having the discussion where we would then start discerning, okay, is this country a high risk or not? Is this risk valid? Should I take the risk or not? But we're not even at that place yet. And, you know, one thing that I think is interesting, my film was funded by the World Bank because no media was going to fund anything like this. This just isn't the kind of story that they believe is of Africa. We have to change our perception on what Africa is in order to even just get editors interested in allowing journalists to cover these kinds of stories.
Steve, thanks very much. By the way, Steve, if you had spare $100,000 or so and were going to invest it somewhere, where would you put it?
I think there are a lot of opportunities in agro-processing. As you know, Africa exports a lot of raw commodities, and because they're selling it raw, they get very little out of it. And those commodities are typically processed in the destination countries where it's a lot more expensive to process things. And also, you know, by that time you've shipped all the waste and byproducts that make up part of the raw commodity. In a lot of African countries, it's perfectly possible to do the processing in the country of origin.
And, for example, what kind of products are you talking about?
Well, cashew nuts is one thing I've been working on. There's other things like cocoa and edible oils.
Okay. Thanks very much, Steve. Good luck.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we can get one last caller in. This is Kahinbe. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who's calling us from Philadelphia.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Now, thanks for taking my call. Like I said, I've been in America for 22 years. I'm from Nigeria. I'm a pharmacist, and I actually have a business in Philadelphia now. For the last few years, we've been looking into taking our business to Nigeria to set an IV admixture company to make IVs for like people that suffer from dysentery, diarrhea, and stuff like that. There's always going to be people complaining about the problems in Africa. I think until we decide as Africans to go back home and face it and show them the ways to deal with the problems, everybody's only going to be complaining. I'm willing to take the chance to do this because I know the local economy. I grew up there for a few years. And we just have to show them how to do things. And if enough positive things are happening, I think a lot of people will follow suit.
Well, Carol Pinoa, I think Kahinbe has got some problems with his radio there. It's still on, so we'll thank him for his call and wish him good luck with his enterprise in Africa.
Yeah.
But Carol Pinoa, as you look at these enterprises, again, outside investment is going to be key. Obviously, African entrepreneurs are also going to be key.
Yes, of course. And the thing is that Africa has to attract outside investment. No country has ever developed from aid alone. It needs to have trade. That's how China did it. That's how India did it. That's how the Asian tigers did it. And so trade with Africa is extremely crucial for developing Africa. It's also extremely crucial for us in America because our market is it's a saturated market. And so we need to start looking for new markets. And Africa is wide open for markets. And you know, if we don't get in there, the Chinese and Indians will.
Carol Pinoa, thanks very much and good luck with the film.
Thank you.
Carol Pinoa, writer, producer, and director of the documentary Africa Open for Business, and she joined us from the studios at member station WABE in Atlanta. Coming up next, which companies are leading the way for gay and transgender employees?